great friend. I met her first when she was working at Food First, as executive director of Food First in Berkeley, but she's since then taken on the leadership of the Open Institute and has done astounding work in mainly the third world countries about land theft by American investment companies, depriving indigenous peoples of their lands in order to speculate on the lands or develop them for resources or mines, and it's just going on to such a degree that very few of us were aware of the degree that this is happening until Honorata came along. She's exposed a tremendous amount of this activity worldwide, including investments by Harvard University and American colleges in some of the worst, most dangerous land developments that have deprived indigenous peoples of their rights and lands and caused enormous pollution and environmental problems all over the third world. And Honorata is also on the board of the International Forum on Globalization and is the author of the book, The Great Land Grab, and here she is, Honorata Beaton.
Good morning, everyone. Well, of my whatever time I have, I want to take a brief 30 seconds to further embarrass Jerry. I just want to talk about what happened today and tomorrow. You know, every time I try to have a conversation around synthetic biology to geoengineering, I'm told it's scientific. Looking at me as if like, you don't get it, it's scientific. Most of us have been told these are issues that are best left to the scientists, best left to the regulatory agencies, because they know what they're doing. So we can go ahead and continue our shopping or whatever we need to do. The next 2 days remind me of what I've personally gone through when IFG has organized teach-ins, whether it was around World Trade Organization in Seattle in 99, or when I just learned about this whole global economy teach-ins in 94, actually in New York. My first arrest actually in the United States happened because I went to the teach-in. Because the information that you get and that spillover that happens, that we need to take back the democratic spaces, that's what these teachers have done for many, many of us. So I want all of us to just turn around and give a big hand to Jerry and the team.
China and India. We need red schemes.
states. We need carbon credit offset schemes so we can continue to consume the way we do in the north. And the answer lies in these lands far away in Africa, in Latin America, Asia. The whole idea of this advertising is that technological innovation, industrial plantations, will remake Africa. They will help feed not just Africa, but help feed the world. They will save the world. The key pillar of this land and life graph is technology and infrastructure, genetically engineered seeds. Farmers, 80% of the food consumed in the developing world comes from smallholder farmers. But in this approach, this top-down approach, these smallholder farmers, if they're not in the export economy, they're useless, they're not successful. They have to be replaced and turned into plantation workers in these large plantations. As Jerry mentioned at the Oakland Institute, we have been looking at the impact of these land deals around the world. We have done very detailed country reports, Ethiopia, Mozambique, South Sudan, United States, Papua New Guinea. Having looked at hundreds and hundreds of land deals, I can share some basic findings. One is, if this is such an amazing solution, there's no transparency around it. You know, you think you can go to Lusaka and Zambia and you can get the listing of all the land deals, the lands that have been taken away. Not possible. You go to Mozambique, you go to Ethiopia, there's no information. You have to get to the ground where you meet communities who walk up to find bulldozers, you know, destroying their homes, destroying their fields. Free prior informed consent, none of that. These people, these villagers who have no postal addresses, do not have a title deed which says it is their land. You don't need to consult with them. Why are they all headed to places like Africa? Is the price of land. You find the most fertile lands for which you would pay $14,000 to $17,000 per hectare in the US, or $26,000 or $28,000 in the UK. People are getting 99-year leases for which they pay as low as 40 cents per hectare. Hectare is the size of a football field. So there were deals that I saw by US former ambassador of refugee affairs. In South Sudan, he managed to get 1 million hectares of land for $25,000. With the right to cut down teak and precious wood that was in that land, he could grow whatever he wanted, from corn to agrofuels. They could even do under the ground digging for minerals, for oil, and had the right to sublease it. They talk about benefits to communities. Over and over again, we found what it results in: people displaced, people who grew food for their families, for their communities, turned into plantation workers. Or as one investor told me in Tanzania, who got the largest land deal, when I asked him, "You have such a great deal, what did you have to promise?" And his response was, "The government is very sensible. They know that we won't be hiring the local people. We will hire South Africans." Kept quiet for a second, looked at me again, and then he said, "White South Africans?" Who are these investors? Who's driving it? We were stunned. Usually we hear, "Oh, it's the Chinese investors." We found investors from everywhere. Jerry mentioned Harvard University, Vanderbilt, to pension funds. How many of you have money in TIAA-CREF? TIAA-CREF. That's one of the biggest, largest land grabbers in this world, which is heavily investing in land for speculative purposes. Land is seen as the next gold, in fact, better than gold. Because it's not just the prices increasing, but you can rent it out and do other things to it. So let me share a few examples of it. This is Heraklis in Square, New York. I talked about the language of sustainability. Heraklis Farms went to Cameroon, managed to get a 99-year lease on 73,000 hectares of land. It is committed to sustainability. What it doesn't tell its investors, these 73,000 hectares are in the world's second largest rainforest. The plan is to cut down the rainforest to put in place a palm forest. The next one, just Sockfin, again talking about advertising. This is Bolloré Group from France, one of the Fortune 500 companies in Sierra Leone. The idea is, again, through belonging to RSPO, to take over communities' lands, and they've been fighting back, and instead put in a palm oil plantation. In fact, the people who protested, it's been 5 years now, have been facing a lawsuit for defamation and for fighting for their resources and the land from Stockton. Some of them are more honest. This is Invest, a company from England which invested in was a peak in Zambia and Swaziland. And they were more honest, they're breaking new land. Their ideology is that you need to invest in land because we have to feed China. And the second area you should invest in is arms, because we'll go to war with China. And these are the strategic relationships. This is a slide from an investor called AgriSoul from Iowa. Belongs to Bruce Rastetter, the Republican kingmaker who owned the third largest ethanol plant. But this says it all. The idea for taking over the largest land deal in Tanzania was they can bring Syngenta and Pioneer and the banks together to revolutionize what agriculture will look like in Tanzania. But let me just share what really happens. This is through mapping that we did, the impact of Heracles Farms in Cameroon. After cutting down, they were hoping to cut down 73,000 hectares of this forest in Cameroon and put in the palm oil plantations. By exposing them and revealing what their real intent was, today the land deal has been reduced to a temporary lease of 3 years. And from 73,000 hectares to 19,000 hectares. It's still 19,000 hectares too much. And the communities are still organizing to get this company out of the lands in the forest. This is Sockfin, the promise of sustainability in Sierra Leone. When I visited them first, this area first, they were homes. They were small fields that belonged to the farmers who lived on the land, who were forcefully evicted, and you have this barren soil there. This is Ethiopia. Ethiopia, which desires to become Africa's lion. This is going to be the Renaissance state, which using technology is building the largest dam in Africa. It plans to displace 1.5 million indigenous people. Whether it's the Suris or the Mursis or Surmas or the Dungathams or the Anuaks. And as we speak, in Gambela, killings are happening so people can be evicted. So the Karaturis of this world, so Ruchi Soya, or the other cotton and sugar plantations can happen on their lands. This happens while the United States, England continue to finance and provide funding for Ethiopia for development. Because this is what development and renaissance looks like. It might sound like after saying this is going to be an important 2 days, these are pretty depressing news when we look at the number of people being displaced, when we see our forests being destroyed, when we see people who depend on minor forests produce, and the wildlife and biodiversity that remains on this land, the threat it faces. But what keeps us going, whether it has been Papua New Guinea, or whether it is Ethiopia, or whether it is Zambia, one thing that we've been told over and over again, this is our land, this is where we were born, and this is where we will die. No government, no corporation can kick us out, no technological solution can feed us the way we have fed ourselves. So resistance is happening, it's leading to conflict, sometimes violent conflicts which cannot be condoned. But let me give you a few examples. This is in Papua New Guinea, where people mobilized. And nobody would have thought a nation which has given away over 11 million hectares of land to logging companies, or given away land to so-called palm oil developers under special agriculture business leases. The president of this, of Papua New Guinea this year, had to come out and cancel illegal deals this year, which has taken back 5 million hectares of land. It is possible. In Argentina, this is a plantation owned by Harvard University, which is destroying the lands, the livelihoods, and the environment of the local people. Imagine a community in a small village in Argentina rising up to Harvard University. Is that happening? Yes, it is. We just don't hear about it. This one is one of the most beautiful stories that I would like to share. I mentioned the largest land deal in Tanzania. Bruce Rastetter, AgriSoul, Summit Farms. They managed to get this land deal, the largest in the country, while nobody knew about it in Tanzania. 800,000 acres. They wanted the government to change the regulations so they could grow GMO corn. They wanted the government to take a World Bank loan so a railway line could be put between their farms and to the port. They wanted this area, which was classified as a special watershed under Ramsar Convention, they wanted it to be classified differently so they could pour in as many pesticides and herbicides as they wanted. More important, they forgot to mention that actually people lived on that land. They said nobody lives on that land. These 800,000 acres were over three different plots. And just in one area, in Fatuba, over 160,000 smallholders live. These are people who came as refugees over 40 years ago. They were told by the government that we'll give you citizenship, finally, after 40 years, when most of them, actually half the population, was born in Tanzania, spoke Swahili, knew nothing about Burundi or DRC or Somalia. They were told, we'll give you citizenship papers if you break down your own home and the churches that you have built. If you bring it all down, we'll give you $100 and the citizenship papers and tell you where to go. This is the Dracula which was brought out into the sunlight. It had no place to hide, it had no place to run. Just last week, the people living on that land, 160,000 people, got the citizenship papers and there is no need to move. They will stay on their lands, they will farm the land, and they will take care of the biodiversity, and they will take care of the watershed area, and they will have, and they have in fact sent a strong message to the government that large lands schemes that you bring in as a development will not happen. To end, I would just say, so what can we do about it? Because communities are rising and fighting back. How can we, who so depend on these communities, the food that's grown in the rest of the world, how can we support them and join the struggle? At the Institute, we got a little tired of going, case by case by case, AgriZone and others, to look at who are the drivers of this. And guess who it is? One of the biggest ones is the World Bank. Remember that institution? The World Bank. World Bank actually does doing business rankings. It ranks countries on what they like to do business with. So if you as Sri Lanka say that, following the war crimes that we did towards the Tamil, we still have all the land and we're going to, instead of returning it to the Tamils, we'll give it to corporations, you get a good ranking. You as Liberia say, hey, as a foreign investor, you want to come in, we are not going to ask you to do environmental impact assessment, you get an even better ranking. And then you as Sierra Leone say, get what? I just got rid of minimum wage requirements. These rankings are not based on the well-being of the nation, the communities, environment. They're based on how low you're willing to go, creating a race to the bottom. So the Institute, we have launched a campaign that we are pleased to report is now supported by over 260 organizations around the world, including trade unions, farm groups, community groups, people impacted. It's called Our Land, Our Business, not the World Bank's Doing Business. In fact, this institution never held polls in our countries to ask for the right to be able to do a report card on the nations. Who gave it the right to do any kind of ranking? It just usurped that right. So the campaign's hashtag, if you're onto Twitter, either tweeting won't save the world, is hashtag world versus bank. This is really about a democratic space. This is about our biodiversity. This is about our food systems. The world has always known how to feed, how to clothe, how to provide jobs with dignity. The problem is how to remove those in power who prevent that from happening. We live in the belly of the beast. And very often, we are told all this is legal. There are regulations around GMOs. It is legal for our food to be contaminated. It is legal for the poor, the pastoralists, the indigenous, to be expelled from their lands. Speaking at a teaching organized by IFG in Hawaii, as I was speaking and sharing that it's all legal, I realized, and I said, segregation was legal. Women didn't have a right to vote. That was legal. And I was shocked at myself because I said, fuck legal. And I don't know.